This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Alan Cumming, is starring in the new Broadway revival of the musical Cabaret.
Welcome, bienvenue, welcome. Fremda, étranger, stranger. Glücklich zu sehen, je suis enchanté. Happy to see you, bleib, rest, stay. Welcome, bienvenue, welcome. In cabaret, au cabaret, to cabaret. Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies and Gentlemen.
When I saw Alan Cumming perform this song on the Tonys in 1998, I thought, I have to see this production. But I never did. I'm so happy I got to see it this time around. Cumming has starred in Cabaret three times, a 1993 London production, the 1998 Broadway revival, for which he won a Tony, we just heard him on that cast recording, and the new revival that opened last week. He plays the MC in a Berlin nightclub of debauchery called the Kit Kat Club in 1929 and 1930, as the Nazis are slowly emerging and no one yet knows how powerful they will become. Only some people sense the danger. The role of the MC was originated by Joel Grey, who starred in the original 1966 Broadway production as well as the 1972 movie. Each of the productions with Cumming was directed by Sam Mendes. Rob Marshall choreographed both American productions and also co-directed the new one. Let's hear how Alan Cumming sounds in the new production by the Roundabout Theatre Company, the same company that produced the 1998 Tony Award-winning production.
Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies and Gentlemen. Guten Abend, bonsoir, good evening, wie geht's, comment ça va, do you feel good? Yeah, I bet you do. Ich bin euer Compensia, je suis votre compère. I am your host. Und sage willkommen, bienvenue, welcome.
Alan Cumming, welcome back to Fresh Air, and congratulations. You're so wonderful in the show. It's so terrific.
Thank you,
so
Teddy.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. You've said, I think, that this revival was your birthday present to yourself. What does that mean? Did you initiate the idea of reviving it again?
No, I didn't. But it was Sam Mendes who called me up a few years ago. And I mean, there's been sort of various attempts to redo it or to put it on since it ended. I mean, I did it for a year from 98 to 99, and it actually finished, I think, in 2004 on Broadway. But anyway, so a few years ago, Sam said, you know, I think it's a good time. The kind of the rights are going to be up, and so therefore someone else will do it, and, you know, maybe the estate wants us to do our production again. And I just sort of thought it would be, and the thing about the birthday is that I'm 49, and so I'll be 50 in January 27th next year. And so in my 50th year, I am singing and dancing in a Broadway musical, and I'm dancing a kick line with, you know, girls who are 24. And so that was kind of the birthday present to myself, that I would be hitting 50 doing things that I couldn't do when I was, you know, 25.
Oh, that is nice. You couldn't kick like that? Or they just didn't have the opportunity?
I was so out of shape and unfit when I was 25. I think even when I did it 15 years ago, I wasn't as fit as I am now.
So why do you love doing the role?
Well, I mean, just on a day-to-day, going to work and doing that, it's such fun. It's, you know, so kind of energetic, and it just takes up every single element of being an actor. It's your body is used to its capacity, both, you know, physically, vocally, and emotionally as well. But also in a kind of larger way, I think it's a really important show, in that the reason it's done again, the reason we're doing it again, is that it has something to say. You know, it's about the rise of Nazism, and the fact that if you're not incredibly vigilant, oppression of some kind can slowly creep up and take over. And I think that the way that the show is like fun, and you say, oh, it's sexy and they're hilarious, and oh, and, blah, blah. And then it slowly goes dark. You, as an audience member, have kind of become complicit in that. And that sort of mirrors the way that you see Nazism creeping in, and people think, oh, it'll be fine, don't worry, nothing's, it's, you know, it'll go away. And then slowly it doesn't, and it's too late.
I would like you to describe your character physically, what you're wearing, what your hair looks like.
Well, initially, I have jet black hair right now, which is not natural, Terry, I'll confess. So I have jet black hair, sort of, you know, late 1920s, kind of floppy on top, short at the back and the sides. The first costume I wear is, I wear a little leather coat, but I shortly take that off, and I've got black dinner suit trousers, but they're cut at the knees, a pair of big combat boots, and this kind of strappy thing, a kind of like suspenders. You know, it's almost like I'm topless, but I've got the suspender thing with a little bow tie at my chest, at my, what do you call that bit in the middle of it? Sternum. And it's almost like a cantilever system to hike up my manhood, if you will.
Yes, your manhood is kind of like italicized
It's in bold.
It's in bold letters, yes.
It's sort of like a wonder bra for the male junk.
What is your take on the host, the MC that you play, and the club, the Kit Kat Club that you're in? Do you have a backstory for him in your mind?
I'll tell you my sort of very slim backstory is he was a rent boy, a boy from the streets of Berlin, who then kind of, you know, started working this club and was kind of funny. And so he got kind of, as he got a bit older, got a job. And the Kit Kat Club is basically a, you know, a den of iniquity. It's got a little show, but there's kind of, you know, sex going on, there's drugs going on. It's a very low life kind of place. So that's basically all my story for this man. He used to be, you know, he has a background as a sex worker who then becomes, you can sing a bit. And I don't know his name. I don't know where he, you know, I actually don't think that's important. I don't worry about that because there is a larger, broader, more overreaching thing about this character. He's kind of like this, he guides the audience. He's like a puppeteer almost, or a sort of a Pied Piper, if you like, who takes the audience on this journey, kind of tells them what to think at certain times, guides them into certain things, and then ultimately, because he's got their trust, can betray that trust or also make them worry for him and for what's going on in the show. So it's almost like a sort of a Brechtian character of standing outside the story and commenting on it as it's happening.
You've portrayed this character in three separate versions of this Sam Mendes production. First, when you were 28 years old in 1993, then when you were 33 years old in 1998, and now when you're 49 years old in 2014.
And next time.
And I've seen the new production, and I've seen excerpts of both of the other productions. And there's things that are very similar. One of the differences is that, you know, you've gotten older. And I think that changes the character. You know, the rent boy turned MC in this kind of seedy club at age 28 is different from that same character at age 49. Because that character hasn't made it out of that club. Still there at age 49. So in that sense, he becomes kind of even darker.
I think that's absolutely true. I think this production of the production is darker, partly because I'm older and because the sort of sex element of the show, the sensationalist kind of, the thing in 1998 when we came to America was so shocking and took up so much of people's perception of the whole show was this, you know, depiction of sexual freedom and hedonism and gay sex and bisexuality and all sorts of things that I think in a way took over a little too much. And now I think, you know, partly because of that production but partly because the world has changed, that is still an element. It's still fun. It's still very much part of what the story is about, but it doesn't overshadow everything. And also it has allowed the kind of darkness to come out a little bit more.
You know, in speaking about the sexuality of this production, it's sexualized in a different way than, say, the movie Cabaret, which I think a lot of people are familiar with. In the movie version of Cabaret, Joel Grey starred in the role of the MC, of the host. And I think he played it kind of, he's great in it. And I think he played it kind of like a ringmaster in a circus of sexual deviance. And I think deviance is what they would have been called at the time. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to use a word from the period. And you play it like you are sexually seducing us into your kind of debauched world.
I mean, I feel like, I mean, I do feel that. I feel like I'm saying, you know, the gesture I do at the very beginning of the show is my finger. I am going, come here, come here, come here. And that's, I think, a sort of overriding metaphor for what I think that character does. And he's going, come on, come on, you know you want to, and it's going to be fun. And then, of course, and the audience does want to, and they do come. And then, of course, that's when they become complicit in the whole horror.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Alan Cumming, who's now starring in the revival of the revival of Cabaret. Based on a revival, exactly. and this is at the Roundabout Theater at Studio 54 in New York. So the character that you play in Cabaret is very sexually ambiguous. I mean, in terms of sexual orientation, gay, bisexual, who knows? into everything, as I think.
Yeah.
whatever he wants it. You came out as bisexual, I think, the same year that Cabaret was revived in the United States in 1998, with you starring in it. And you've been married for how long? You have a husband.
I have a husband. I've been married to him since 2007. So 7 years.
So did you time coming out with the production of Cabaret?
It was all a huge press campaign. It was all a massive Machiavellian
Clever.
Plot. No, I...
That's
I,
the point of sexuality, actually.
Power.
Yeah.
Kind of is. What I think you're getting at, I'll give you a little precis that I hope will answer your question. I've always felt I was bisexual. I used to be married to a woman. Before that, I'd had a relationship with a man. I then had another relationship with a woman. And then I've had, you know, relationships with men. So I still would define myself as bisexual, partly because that's what I feel, but also because I think it's important to... I think that sexuality in this country especially is very seen as a very black and white thing. And I think we should encourage the grey. You know, I mean, I don't kind of go around in my life thinking, oh my God, I'm going to have sex with a woman soon because I said I was bisexual. That's what I feel inside. It's like saying you're straight or you're gay or you're bisexual. It's just what you are. And whatever you're doing in your life is almost, it runs obviously parallel, but it's kind of secondary to how you are inside. And so that's how I've always felt, and I still do, even though, you know, I am very happily married to a really amazing man, and I wish to be so for the rest of my life. The other thing is that the coming out thing, in 1998, when I came to America, there was such a huge explosion of interest in the show and in me, and I hadn't really, you know, I was kind of well-known in Britain, but I hadn't really ever discussed my sexuality in a public way like that. And because of playing this character and all the kind of slight, you know, puritanical shockwaves that were sending around America, a lot of people were just constantly, constantly, constantly asking me about it. And so I decided to take matters into my own hand, and I did an interview and a cover story for Out magazine, and I thought that was a good forum for it to be discussed calmly and adultly. And so I did that. So it was kind of as a result of all the speculation. And but it was really funny. I remember people saying, so the first question in an interview for some, like, you know, weighty tome would be, so are you gay? And I would go, why, do you fancy me? And then go, oh, no, just someone in my office was asking. And I was like, oh, really? Well, you know, I thought, really, is that the most important thing? And sometimes it is the most important thing, because people can't, if people don't have a black and white answer, they can't get beyond that. And so you have to kind of, I think you just got to get out of the way. And that's what I did. And it wasn't like it's one of those things, when you become famous and people are more interested in your personal life often than your work, it's a weird thing, because you think, oh, I seem to be sleeping with more boys now. Should I do a press release? You know, it's a really difficult one to know when to announce.
Were you afraid that if you didn't say something yourself that you'd be outed in a really nasty way by somebody trying to hurt you and not realizing? You
know, well, I mean, really.
It's not like it's even like it's a bad thing, but people reveal secrets in nasty ways.
Yeah, I thought that I was actually, one of the other reasons was I was having a relationship with a man for the first time. I mean, well, aside from like someone at college, I was living with a man for the first time, and I was just really worried that he and his family and my family were going to be harassed mm-hmm. by the British press, actually. So, because I had been harassed in the previous relationship I'd had with a woman, you know, I saw some really nasty things happening. And so I just wanted to avoid that again.
So since you were out in 1998 when you first revived cabaret in America, did it change your performance at all? Did it release something within you to be kind of publicly out as gay or bisexual? It's because the character seems to be gay or bisexual, and it's a very sexual dance that you do in the show.
I think when I came to New York, I felt more comfortable as a person. I definitely felt more comfortable with where I was in my life and the sexuality thing being a part of that. And just actually, when I did it in 1993, I was crazy. So that was quite good for the character as well. But there wasn't, it was more sensual when it came to New York, definitely. And I think that's partly to do with Rob Marshall's input into the choreography. So I definitely felt, as a person and as a man and as an actor, as a sort of performer in general, much more open. And I think that really worked.
You said that in the 1993 British production of Cabaret, at the time, that you were crazy. What did you mean by that?
I was crazy. I actually had a nervous breakdown shortly after that.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was pretty nuts. I just played Hamlet. I was exhausted. I was in the process of breaking up with my wife. A lot of things. It was like the perfect storm of horror. And it was a really bad time for me. And it was a start. It was actually the start of a series of events in my family and things about stuff that happened in my childhood. So that it was just, you know.
Did you say about stuff that happened in your childhood?
Yeah. But my father and things like that, which I am detailing in my forthcoming memoir. But it was just, you know, it was a really, I mean, it kind of was interesting because the role was very complex and certainly Hamlet's very complex and dark and deep. And then, of course, coming to do the MC after that was really, but I was not in a healthy place. I was in a weird place. And I think that was, in a way, the kind of doing that show every night was really good for me. It kind of took me out of my depression a bit. But, you know, I was very, I had a sort of eating disorder. It was terrible. And then shortly after that, as I say, I kind of just really had to go away and, you know, let things have their course and kind of have a bit of a breakdown.
Look forward to reading about that in your
yes,
your memoir, which is published,
October,
I think, in October. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's called Not My Father's Son.
Yeah.
So let me just ask you one other question about sexual orientation. You're
bashing on at this one, Teddy.
No. Here's the question. you describe yourself as bisexual. Does that make some people angry? Like, no, you have to decide. You're really gay, aren't you? Or do you know what I mean? People want...
Yes, I think it does. I mean, I think there's that... I think it's slightly... I mean, I say, sometimes I just say I'm gay. Sometimes I, you know, if I'm having a conversation with an adult like you, an intelligent person like you, I try and talk about it in this way, and I explain why I define myself in that way. But if you know, I'm called gay or queer or something all the time, I'm perfectly happy with that. But when I have my druthers, that's how I would describe it. I mean, I think the idea that people say, oh, you're just really gay, you're afraid to say it, that doesn't apply in my case. You know, hi, I'm Alan Cumming, I'm gay. There you go. For me, I think I want to push the idea that, you know, bisexuality is not something that's just a transitionary state to becoming homosexual, or, you know, that you help out when they're busy, sort of thing. I'm glad you got that. Not many Americans get that gag.
Alan Cumming will be back in the second half of the show. He's starring in the new Broadway revival of Cabaret, produced by the Roundabout Theatre Company. Here he is on the 1998 cast recording. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
So you see, everyone in Berlin has a perfectly marvelous roommate. Some people have two people. Two ladies. Two ladies. And I'm the only man, yeah. I like it. They like it. This two for one. Two ladies.
Two ladies.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Alan Cumming. He's starring in the new revival of Cabaret as the MC of the Kit Kat Club, a decadent nightclub in Berlin, in 1929 and 1930, as the Nazis are beginning to gain power. It's Cumming's third time in that role. He also starred in the 1993 London revival and the 1998 Broadway production by the Roundabout Theatre Company, which also produced the new revival of the musical. His other recent credits include co-starring on The Good Wife as Eli Gold and on Web Therapy as Austin Clark, hosting Masterpiece Mystery, and starring in the film Any Day Now. Here's Alan Cumming performing the song Money from the 1998 cast recording of Cabaret.
Money makes the world go round, the world go round, the world go round. Money makes the world go round. It makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck, or a pound, a buck, or a pound, a buck, or a pound is all that makes the world go round. That clinking, clanking sound can make the world go round.
Money, 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 money.
If you happen to be rich and you feel like a night's entertainment, you can pay for a gay escapade. If you happen to be rich and alone and you need a companion, you can ring, ting-a-ling, for the mate. If you happen to be rich and you find you are left by your lover, though you moan and you groan quite a lot, you can take it on the chin, call a cab, and begin to recover on your 14-carat yacht. Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, of that we can be sure. I'm being poor.
Money, 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 money.
That's Alan Cumming singing Money from the 1998 cast recording of Cabaret, and he's starring now in the new revival of it. I really do love the way you sing. And I want to hear how you prepared to sing for this role, but before we talk about that, I want to play you something that John Kander had to say. I interviewed John Kander, who wrote the music, Fred Ebb wrote the lyrics for Cabaret, and I asked him what he did before composing the music for Cabaret, and what he listened to, and here's what he told me.
For Cabaret, I listened to a lot of German jazz and vaudeville music, also of the late 20s and very early 30s, and then promptly forgot about it. It sounds like a very kind of crude way of doing research, but it works for me. You listen and you listen and you listen, and then put it away and don't think about it anymore. And I have this absolute belief that the styles of the music that you've been listening to seep into your unconscious and come out in your own language.
And that was John Kander on Fresh Air in 2003. And my guest is Alan Cumming, who's starring in the new revival of Cabaret. So John Kander said that, you know, he listened to all this music and then just let it seep in as opposed to actually thinking about it when he was composing. What did you listen to? And did you have that attitude, too, that it would just naturally seep in?
I'm a big believer in seepage. I am. I really am. The first time around, And this time again, I read a lot of stuff about the Weimar cabarets and just generally the history of that time. What was great when we did it in London the first time was that Stephen Spender, who was one of the chums of Christopher Isherwood and W.H. Auden, those boys who were, you know, in Berlin at that time, he was still alive then. He came into rehearsal to ask to sort of, you know, talk to us, and we got to ask him questions. So that was amazing to have someone who's actually really there. And I said, it was so funny because they said, you know, just be very respectful. Don't, you know, stay off the whole sex thing, blah, 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 blah. So we were asking questions, and I could tell we were getting along. And I said, so Stephen, you boys from Oxbridge, you didn't really go across there to kind of chronicle the surge of fascism and the change of this whole... You really went there to get shagged, didn't you? You just went to get boys. And he was like, yes, of course we did. Yes, of course. And I love the idea that this kind of amazing period of history has been chronicled so amazingly by Christopher Isherwood and many other people, but in this case by him, was actually a happy accident, because they really just went there. They were from England, you know, puritanical, shameful England, and they went to Berlin, where you could have sex with people all the time and go to dirty bars, and no one would know. So that was a key for me into getting into this role and understanding what it was like in that time. And I think as well, I asked a lot of questions about what the clubs were like. And what I love is that actually Christopher Isherwood wrote another book called Christopher and His Kind, which is it's an autobiography that kind of is the unsanitized version of the two books, Goodbye to Berlin and Mr. Norris Changes Trains is the name in Europe. I can't remember what you call it in America, but the two books that Cabaret is based on. And the autobiography is like, you know, the real story of what happened. But even then, he's still not able to be fully open and present. So he writes it in the third person. And I thought that was fascinating too, that he talks about Christopher went into the bar and looked at the boy and he paid him 10 marks and blah, blah, blah. But what I found really amazing and very different about that and about understanding all of this is that when you would have sex with a boy, they would become your friend. They would kind of be, there would be a sort of a, there's a sort of a nobility to it, that they would become... like in the way that Ernst says to Cliff in Cabaret, you know, we are now friends. We have something as exchanged between us. It's not necessarily a sexual thing, but in this case with these boys, it was. And I think that's something we just don't comprehend in certainly in America and not in Britain so much. This idea of camaraderie that comes with sex, casual sex. So that I thought was really fascinating too. So that you can be joyful and have no shame about just a casual encounter, and you can actually be friends with that person afterwards.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Alan Cumming, and he's now starring in a revival of Cabaret at the Roundabout Theatre, Studio 54 in New York. So you've met and performed with Liza Minnelli.
Yes, Liza.
What did she mean to you before you met her?
It's almost like she was like a movie star from a long, long time ago, like the kind of like a silent movie star or something. She had that kind of sort of mist swirling around her, and I'd seen the movie of Cabaret, and it was more like a lot of the thing. It's hard to describe it. It was more like I was aware of the effect she had on the world and on people, rather than knowing that much about her. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't till I was 30. I'd never been to America. You know, I was aware of American culture and things that in Britain, but I didn't ever sort of engage in it fully because I don't know why. I just didn't. And then, of course, when I met Liza, she came into my dressing room with Fred Ebb, and as in this tiny dressing room, it was like a kind of size of a shoebox. And she came in and gave me a hug and said, Alan, I want to be your friend forever, which is such a darling thing to say. And then I saw Fred, I went, oh, Fred. And when I finished talking to Fred, I realised that Liza had pushed herself against the wall and had her face in my wet towel, which was hanging on a hook on the wall, in order for me, because the room was so small, in order for me to talk to Fred. And I went, oh, Liza, you're squashed into my towel. She's like, Alan, I'd be squashed into your towel forever for you. She's just she's just the most lovely, hilarious person. And so I've been doing these concerts with her and stuff, and I just think, lovely Liza, and we have a real laugh. And I think we just get on. I don't know why. We just have a really great understanding of each other.
Did she give you any advice about cabaret?
Well, I can't really say it on,
that sounds
on the
good.
Radio. It's more just a kind of a... Like when she came to see Macbeth, the Macbeth that I did last summer, or the last 2 summers, she said this thing, which is a really great... I actually love it. I love this thing. I'll just do... I'll paraphrase it. But she says, just before I was about to go on, I was really terrified. She went, "Darling, take no prisoners and F bleep the wounded." And I think that's great. I mean, obviously not literally, but as a go get 'em and just, don't let anything hold you back. Right. It's a great sort of way of thinking about performing. And I'm a big believer in that. You just have to dive off the cliff, and so is Liza.
So here's a very intellectual question I wanted to ask you. You'll appreciate the depth of this. in a lot of your choreography and cabaret, your arms are raised over your head. You did not shave under your arms. I don't know what the protocol is for men now. Like, men defoliate their chests, for movies.
Yes.
So I don't know what the story is supposed to be for under your arms. I worked really hard
Teddy
on that
gross.
Question.
Teddy gross. I'm appalled. Well, you notice the girls don't shave under their arms either.
I know, I didn't notice that. Oh, no, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, the girls have got to have hairy armpits. That was part of the down and dirty thing of the club. I have extensive hair under my arms. I'm aware of that. I have... it's actually annoying because
I've seen more. It's really not... Yeah, go ahead.
But yeah, but it's not... I mean, I'm not a hairy person. I've longed to have a hairy chest. I mean, I have. I have a little kind of tuft in my sternum. Gosh, I've said sternum twice in this interview. I don't think I've said sternum for years before this. But I have a little tuft there. And then I've got odd ones across my chest. And I've always... I remember when my dad got a hairy chest. I was old enough to think, oh, he suddenly got a hairy chest. He was probably in his 30s or something. And I'm now nearly in my 50s. And it hasn't happened. But I seem to have all my hair in my armpits. And actually, it seems to cause great consternation to people. I did a thing for the Scottish Independence campaign. I did a photo and on Twitter, and this hashtag is GoForItScotland. It's a thing to encourage people who are not able to vote in the independence referendum to sort of just show their support. So I started this thing, and I was holding a sign up saying GoForItScotland, and you saw my armpit hair. I had a sleeveless thing on. God, more people talked about my armpit hair than about the actual issue of independence. Which kind of defeated the purpose a wee bit. But I don't know. I just I trim them sometimes. But I actually really, just as a sort of side point, if you're going to, ask a silly question, I'm going to say a thing about it. I think this obsession we have in our culture with shaving, taking away body hair, like on men and women, I think is really dangerous. And it's sort of like wanting to infantilize yourself and wanting to kind of, make something sexy that is not adult. It's more sort of prepubescent. And I think that's really weird and dangerous, don't you?
I do, actually. Thank you for saying that.
You're welcome.
Well, Alan Cumming, since so many of our listeners also know you from The Good Wife, I thought we should talk about that a little bit and maybe hear a scene featuring you as Eli Gold. So this scene is from episode 15 of season 1. Your character, Eli Gold, is called in to help Chris Noth's character, Peter Florek, make a political comeback. And Florek has just gotten out of jail on corruption charges and is under house arrest. He's wearing an ankle bracelet, but he hopes to be vindicated and to run again for Cook County State Attorney. In this scene, you've come to Florek's home to meet him for the first time. Two of Florek's consultants are there, and they have a couple of photos that they want you to look at. You're all gathered in the kitchen, and the beeping sounds that we hear quietly in the background are coming from the dishwasher.
So this is the kitchen cabinet?
Yep.
And this must be the faked photo. Do you have the original?
Nope.
The envelope it came in?
Thrown away.
Thrown away or destroyed?
Thrown away.
Well, that was clumsy.
Yeah. So, Eli, look, considering your reputation, I think we're going to have to talk about a few ground rules.
And what have you heard about my reputation?
That you speak your mind, your mind tends toward expletives, you're a classically trained pianist, and you require Saturdays off.
Who told you about Saturday? Chicks of Bambi over there?
I've also been told that in a street fight, you're the man.
You want me to watch my swearing?
Listen, considering my circumstances, my home will remain our base and my wife and children live here.
You need to replace the strainer. Okay, first of all, Peter?
Yes?
The only reason I'm here is because what I've heard about your reputation.
Which is?
You're a son... Can I say son of a bitch, or is that too salty?
That's fine.
You, sir, are a son of a bitch, but a son of a bitch who likes to change things for the better. I've also heard that you're toxic, and if I join your merry little band of political hobbyists here, I'm going to end up regretting it.
That sounds about right.
Okay, here's my first piece of advice. Fire Bambi.
Hey.
And hire your son. This is the best piece of Oppo research this campaign has done.
Yes, but we're still trying to figure out who it is.
Oh, I know who it is.
Who?
It's a federal investigator doing scout work for a possible indictment.
How do you know that? You can't know that.
Oh, I know a lot of things, lady. The question is, why don't you know it? Look, you're under federal investigation. What you need to find out is why.
There's a scene from The Good Wife with my guest, Alan Cumming, as the operative Eli Gold. Was this tough-talking operative an unusual role for you?
Yes. I mean, I think everyone was shocked when I was cast in that role, including myself. I mean, and also, I didn't really want to do it. I was sort of like, what? Because I wasn't asked to come and do it for seasons and seasons. I was asked to do one episode, and I was like, oh, you know, what the hell? I didn't understand it. I was like, who is this person? What's going on? The only thing I knew about this show was like Juliana. I saw Juliana on a bus stop, and then I remember.
You mean on a poster on a bus stop?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, not literally. She wasn't literally on a bus stop. No, she wasn't. That would be weird. Juliana just sitting on top of a bus stop. Anyway, it's funny. My managers and the agents, you have all these people who are working for you and working with you. And then sometimes you think, God, they get paid so much money. What the hell do they do? And actually, they said to me, do this. Do this character. Do this episode. And look, imagine if I had followed my own advice. I wouldn't have done this at all. And this really great thing in my life wouldn't have happened. So that's, you know, sometimes they're worth it.
And your character's changed a lot.
Every season he has a new job. That's the thing I love about television. Is that some things, he had a daughter, she just disappeared. I don't know what happened to her. His ex-wife, she was supposed to come, she didn't come back. Things, I love that. They're just, I've been a political operative, then I was a campaign manager, then I was a crisis manager, then I was a campaign manager again, and now this time I'm a chief of staff. I mean, they're all vaguely related, but they're not the same. And then I was a partner. I became a partner at Lockhart Gardner, I remember the other day. And I don't seem to be anymore. You know, that's just television. Things happen. I quite enjoy it.
Yeah.
In a way, you have to just be light with it and just play the moment. Because often nobody knows where it's going to end up, you know. And it has a lot to do with other circumstances. But I'm actually really excited about we're going to do another season, season 6 now. And I'm quite excited about going back and what the story is going to be. So... It's funny though, I was playing the MC and doing Eli Gold at the same time. And so what's funny is towards the end of this season, you'll notice that Eli's hair gets a little darker. And having, you know, salt and pepper hair, that was my hair, because I dyed my hair black for Cabaret, they had to put like, you know, paint in grey streaks into my black hair. And I know Eli gets a little thinner as well as his alter ego is dancing up a storm.
That explains Eli's spit curl. I was wondering about that.
And his slight German accent.
Yes. If you're just joining us, my guest is Alan Cumming, and he's now starring in a great production of Cabaret that's actually a revival of revival of revival. He's been in all three of those revivals, starting in 1993 in England. This production is a Roundabout Theater production, and it's at Studio 54 in New York. This is Fresh Air, and if you're just joining us, my guest is Alan Cumming, who stars in the new revival of Cabaret at Studio 54 in New York. It's a Roundabout Theater production, and he plays the host, the MC, the role that was originated by Joel Grey, and he's terrific. So we are recording this on Thursday, April 24th, And tonight is your opening night.
That's right.
So what does that mean? Like, are you nervous now? I can't believe you're doing this interview now. I'm so happy that you were able to come today. But so are you nervous? You've been doing this for weeks in rehearsal. And
yeah, we've been previewing for a month. You know, mm-hmm. we've done like,
I mean previous. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So no, I mean like last night I was like, oh, you know, our fate is sealed. And it's been a bit like Groundhog Day because you just kind of, you're in this state where, you know, tomorrow all the reviews will come out, all the kind of, you know, it's just been announced we're extending until January and all that stuff. And tonight is really, I mean, it's kind of nerve-wracking because it's the big, the kind of, da-da, here we are. But actually, all the people in the audience are your friends and your agents, and who are your friends as well often. And the critics. No, the critics are not in tonight. The critics come actually, you know, for... Actually, probably when you were there, there was critics, and they come like over a period of like three or four nights.
I was there for previews. I thought critics weren't allowed to review.
No, they come well towards the end of previews. They come in, and then so that on the it's different how they do it here in America. That in London, like when you do a play in the West End, like the first night is like full of critics. Like you can actually see them with their when you're on stage, you can see them with their little notepads. You can even hear them sometimes scribbling away in their bitter little fashion. But in America, they're spread out over three or four nights. I mean, on Broadway anyway. So all the critics have been. And so tonight it's just this big celebration. And then we have a party. And then, you know, you've got to do press and stuff like that. And it's kind of like sort of fun. But actually, the thing that I... last time when I did it, it was so overwhelming for me, the whole experience, all this stuff, that this time around, I feel like I can enjoy it more because I understand what's going to happen. I understand that tonight is like, going to be a bit like speed dating. I'm going to just seriously. I'll be like, "Hi, oh, thank you so much. Oh, a photo, yes, sure. Hi, oh, thank you. Oh, that's lovely. A photo, yes, sure." Like that. So you know, and then eventually, a time comes when I say, "Can we have the security around me? I don't want to talk to anyone else. I'm just going to want to have a wee drink with my friends." And you know, so I understand. I feel like I'm an old pro now, and I can do what I have to do, but also draw the line and say, "Now I'm going to have some fun." And then also, guess what I'm going as? I mean, guess what my outfit is?
What?
You know that Otto Dix painting, Sylvia von Harden?
No.
It's like a lady sitting at a table in a cafe. She's got a cocktail and a little cigarette case. She's smoking. She's got a black and red check dress on and a little short haircut and a monocle. I assume she's a lesbian, but I may be wrong. And I'm going as her. I've got an outfit that my friend Trevor Raines, the designer, because he's like all these people wanted to dress me, you know, and it becomes a kind of sort of weird, like, you know, you don't want to be rude to people. And it's like all these people want to dance with you or have sex with you, and you don't want to let them down. So I decided that I would do my own thing and go have a modern interpretation of an image that is very much an inspiration for the production. Like, we have those images of Otto Dix all over the walls. And
I see.
And Gross and all those painters. And so...
George Gross,
George Gross. So I'm going... It's like a kind of pair of shorts and a little top with a little zip. And I've got a monocle and everything. And I'm going to have a pretend, you know, like an electronic cigarette. And I'm going to go as that painting.
Oh, that sounds great.
I think it's great. But I'm sure everyone... By the time this is broadcast, you'll have read... how nuts I am and how crazy people think I am and I'll be in the back of those awful trashy magazines and fashion police, but I don't care. I like it.
Oh, that sounds great. Alan Cumming, this was so much fun, and congratulations on your performance. It is so good. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm a big fan and it was lovely to talk to you.
My interview with Alan Cumming was recorded last Thursday. Cumming is starring in the Broadway revival of Cabaret by the Roundabout Theater Company. You can see a picture of him in his opening night outfit side by side with a photo of the Otto Dix painting that inspired it on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross. We'll close with Cumming's version of a song performed by Liza Minnelli in the movie Cabaret and by Michelle Williams in the current revival.